Hello, and welcome to Bricks and Mortar with me, Sarah Jackman. Today we're taking a look at the rural pathway into surveying, and to help me with that, I'm joined by Charles Cowap, Chartered Surveyor, Training Specialist, and an academic. Charles has over 30 years of experience of new developments in rural estate management and valuation. He also produces the EG's column Rural View once a quarter. Charles, thank you very much for joining us this morning. How are you?
Morning, Sarah. Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
No, not at all. Charles, you've had a long and varied career in rural surveying. Tell me a little bit about that career and really your experience as a rural surveyor.
My career started by having to go to work on a farm in the mid-1970s. I'm in Suffolk for a year. At that time, if you were a rural surveyor, you had to get practical experience like that before you study rural estate management. That doesn't apply now. And I went to Royal Agricultural College in Gloucestershire, Cirencester, for 3 years, as it then was. After my studies there, I then became what was called a Surveyor and Land Management Advisor for the Agricultural Advisory Service. I spent several very happy years working in Nottingham and then Cheshire in the 1980s, advising farmers and landowners and local authorities on various aspects of new construction work, estate management work, landlord and tenant work, town and country planning work. By the late 1980s, I realized that one of the things I hadn't done very much of as a chartered surveyor was valuation work.
Right.
So I became a government valuer for a few years. And I did a lot of work then on compulsory purchase work, infrastructure work, general property valuation, and valuation of property for tax purposes as well.
Okay.
I then combined private practice work with teaching for some years before becoming a full-time academic. And I've just retired as a full-time academic and am now continuing once again to do some specialised consultancy work. And still enjoying it.
Good. That's always the main thing. So quite a varied career then. You talk first about your experience working on a farm in Suffolk. Was that something that was driven by family connections, or how did you fall into that?
Yes, it's funny how I fell into all that. I think there was a degree of good luck along the way. My father was a soldier, and I grew up mainly in central London, but because Dad was a soldier, I went away to a boarding school when I was 11 years old. And in the sixth form, all my friends were making applications to go to university. And I really felt two things at the time. One was that I didn't want to go to university to carry on studying another subject like I'd been studying at school for A-level. And the second one was that it really borne in on me the contrast between life in the centre of London and life in the countryside. And of the two, I preferred life in the countryside. The school itself was a London County boarding school, as it happened, but it was based in Suffolk near Ipswich on the banks of the River Orwell. And I decided I would like to work in an environment like that. And it had been the mansion house at the heart of a large country estate. So I just learned a little bit about that. Learned that you could work as a rural estate manager or land agent, as we more often call them. And I rather fancied that to be my career. I found out that there was one course in the country at the time that you could study. But in order to join that course, you had to have a year's pre-college practical experience.
Right.
Or in an estate office. And through some of my teachers at school, actually, I managed to get the placement on a farm for a year in another part of Suffolk. And I still draw on that experience. It was tremendously good experience.
And what did that experience entail at the time? What sort of things were you put to work to do?
Yes, lots of hard work. I think after the first week, even though I was a reasonably fit 18-year-old young man, I didn't know what had hit me. But I started in July. I lived in, and it was getting into the peak of the harvest season. It was in 1976, that big drought summer. So there was all the harvest work. We grew wheat and barley on the farm, so all that had to be harvested over the summer. A lot of leading in the corn to the corn store, and also we baled all the straw, so collecting all the bales from the fields. The farm was a very mixed farm. It had a dairy herd on it, and some pigs and a small flock of sheep as well. So I did a lot of work with the livestock, some with the cows, just about everything to do with the pigs, from helping with the piglets when they were born to routine feeding and so on of the older pigs. So a whole range of livestock duties and arable duties as well, driving tractors and driving other machines on the farm. I learned an enormous amount about practical hard work.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds incredibly hands-on, actually.
Oh, very hard, totally hands-on. Yeah, it was totally hands-on every day.
And so that experience then really enthused you. You weren't sort of put off by that hands-on, practical experience of life in estate management.
Not at all, Sarah. In fact, if anything, there were times during that year when I thought, oh, perhaps I'd like to be a farmer rather than a estate manager. But the fact is, it's very expensive to become a farmer.
Yes.
And there's only so many jobs for farm managers. And although I had great experience, you know, people who've been born and bred and brought up on farms have such an advantage anyway in that sort of area.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't become a farmer. I think I've had a far more interesting career for me as a rural estate manager and consultant.
Yeah. And you mentioned there was just one academic institution at the time that offered that course, and it's obviously a completely different picture today. Tell me how that has evolved and really the sort of factors driving that.
Yeah, enormously, really, Sarah. I think the one college that offered a rural estate management course at the time was the Royal Agricultural College at Cirencester. It was possible to go to Reading University, which had a rural qualification as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the big difference between the two was that Cirencester, you did rural subjects from year one. In Reading, you studied alongside their other property investment and management students for 2 years and then took a specialist syllabus in the final year on the rural aspects of the job. And really, I knew that I wanted to be rural straight away. So from my point of view, there was just the one course. And that stayed the case until the late 1980s, actually, when Harper Adams started its course. But the course at Cirencester was a three-year full-time course, and indeed they still offer three-year full-time courses, and the way they teach them, the way that the exact content of them has changed over the years, but the basic structure of a three-year full-time course is still the same.
Mm.
Harper Adams started to offer a course in the late 1980s, and that was a four-year course with a placement.
Right.
Yeah, which was a useful addition, I think, to the portfolio for youngsters. And the other thing that has grown considerably since that time has been the number of postgraduate courses. They simply didn't exist in the late 1970s and 80s. But for graduates of other disciplines looking for a conversion route into rural practice surveying, there's a very good choice of those at several of the universities and colleges as well.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that has come along now, which would have enthused me, I think, when I was that age, is that this autumn, 2018, Harper Adams has launched an apprenticeship, which is a five-year degree apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And I think the case is that the students who've started the course will spend 8 weeks at the university spread throughout the year, every year, doing their academic studies. They'll be in employment during this time. And at the end of the 5 years, not only will they have earned the rural enterprise and land management degree from Harper Adams, they will also be eligible to take their final RICS assessments, the assessment of professional competence.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for the practically minded youngsters entering the profession who can find a good training place, that's a very exciting development, that apprenticeship, I think.
Yeah.
I would imagine we will see some more coming along from some of the other universities. But that remains to be seen, obviously.
Of course. And just explain, what's driven that increase in demand and availability of courses over those decades?
Well, I think there's no shortage of job vacancies in the profession. And I think if you go back to the early 80s, with one college having a virtual monopoly on supply, that probably wasn't very good for anybody involved, really. And when I went to Cirencester, it was possible to get state education grants. go there, which I did. But by the late 1980s, it had become a totally private institution and you couldn't get grant funding to go there. And I think that put an imperative on other institutions developing courses within the public part of education, so that the courses were accessible to as wide a range of people entering the profession. And I think that's continued to be an important driver. I think at the one end, there are the jobs there, and especially for the best candidates. And I think it's quite achievable to study rural estate management or some variation on it and get a job and progress in the profession well. But at the other end of it, I think trying to make sure that these opportunities are as available as possible to as big a range of people as possible is really, really important. And that's still a big driver, actually. I think it's great, actually, to do things like this podcast, because widening awareness of the profession on the rural side is an important work. I know one of my former colleagues at Harper Adams has been working on the development of a website called Grow Your Future. It's still in a testing phase, I think, at the moment, but the idea is to put little case studies on there of different experiences that people in rural practice surveying have had to try and widen awareness amongst young people.
We've talked a little bit about the apprenticeship scheme. We've also talked about the range of academic options available now. What sort of things can today's candidates expect to be covering once they've secured those places?
On a course, what subjects will be included?
Exactly.
It's a very packed syllabus for rural estate management, very packed indeed. But one can more or less boil it down into several themes, I think. First of all, there's what you might call a production theme. So agriculture, livestock farming, arable farming, alternative crops, and so on. And forestry and woodland management would be important elements in that. Sticking with production for a moment, we've also introduced to the syllabus over the years various aspects like energy production, because of the growing importance of that as a business in the countryside. You know, everything from wind farms to solar panels to hydropower installations. And while I don't think many rural practice surveyors would claim to be technically expert in any of those things, they're nevertheless things that we encounter as diversification opportunities. And they're things that we have to value for various purposes from time to time as well. Then there's what you might call a sort of valuation and professional studies theme. That would involve getting to grips with a basic understanding of law. That's both general law, contract, tort, those sorts of areas. So negligence and nuisance and all the other things that can go wrong professionally or as a landowner and manager. And that would then develop into more specialist areas of the law, like agricultural tenancy law, residential tenancy law, commercial tenancy law, with a big emphasis on agricultural tenancies. That's a very highly specialised field, which rural surveyors tend to be the most knowledgeable people on. There's a few lawyers who are well versed in it, but it's not as spread across the legal profession as it is across the rural surveying profession. Compulsory purchase and compensation for infrastructure works and so on would come into that part of the syllabus as well. There's a construction element in the syllabus, because after all, if you're going to value rural property, you need to be familiar with the appraisal of buildings. And simple construction surveying and design comes into that as well, so they would all be part of the syllabus. Yeah, quite broad, and there are other elements which come in there as well. Increasingly, an emphasis on diversification, environmental matters, the environmental protection and management of the countryside. I think increasingly as well, we're going to see a greater emphasis on emerging ideas like natural capital and ecosystem service schemes and the like in the surveying syllabus as well. And not to forget the valuation syllabus for a rural practice surveyor is very similar to that for a general practice surveyor.
Is it?
Because if you think of it, the assets that you come across to value in the countryside a typical rural estate might have farms and forests on it. Some of the farms might be let to tenants. It might have retail premises because they've diversified old farm buildings. Might have a village pub on there, certainly large houses, let cottages and quarries and renewable energy installations, fishing and sporting rights, you know, no end of it. So, so the valuation syllabus is very important for that.
And just how competitive is securing a place on a land management course, perhaps compared to some other areas of surveying courses?
I think probably a little more competitive than other areas of surveying courses.
Is it?
I say that because there are fewer courses available. If you look at the number of urban focused courses, probably every major city has a university offering a course in that area. Whereas on the rural side in England and Wales, we're really at three major institutions. In Wales itself, none at all, nothing in Northern Ireland, and two in Scotland. Having said that, though, I don't think the fact that it's more competitive than perhaps more urban-focused courses need put off good applicants. On the whole, the courses are now looking for pretty high A-level grades. They're looking for Bs and upwards, really, I think, on the whole. But because there are different routes in, I think for somebody who's determined to get on a course, they will get on a course if that's what they want to do. I don't think they need fear that there won't be a place. Because there are, as I said, a number of different ways through, really, whether you do it as an undergraduate or a postgraduate.
Yeah, yeah. And we've talked a lot about the academic side of it. What can graduates expect once they've finished the course? I mean, what are the opportunities available to them?
Wide-ranging, I think. It might be helpful to categorise the different areas that people would go into when they graduate.
Mm.
The common thing that all graduates from a conventional course, graduate course would be doing anyway, would be looking for a position which enables them to spend 2 years getting the experience for the RICS assessment of professional competence.
Yep.
If a graduate has done a placement course, they will have 1 year of that experience already, so they've got a year to go. But the principle is the same, that all graduates will be looking for a place to work through to get their APC successfully completed. Some might go into what you might call traditional estate management role.
Yep.
Now, they might be assisting the resident manager on a large rural estate. Some are very large indeed, very well known. The Buccleuch Estates in Northamptonshire and Scotland would be an example of that. Some might go into other estate management roles with organisations like the National Trust, the Ministry of Defence, and the Forestry Commission, for example, as well. Any of the landowners of large, extensive areas in the countryside. County councils would also be a source of that sort of employment as well. Others may go into estate management work, but by being based within one of the surveying firms that offers that as a service to its clients. And those firms can range from some of the largest firms in the country. Savills, for instance, has a very active rural arm to its practice. Strutton Parker, who's taken over by PMP Baribar. But for the majority, they're probably employed in more locally orientated firms. So firms that outside their immediate county or region may be relatively unknown, but within their home territory are very well known indeed. In Shropshire, there are firms like Balfour's and several others who would come into that category. So the category of work there is doing estate management. Then there would be others who go to work probably for a private practice firm, who would probably be getting a range of experience across specialist service. So they may be helping with valuation work with the intention ultimately of becoming a registered valuer. They may help with planning and development work, particularly in the diversification of farms or the redesign of farmsteads, expansion of some of the larger arable farms, dairy farms, and so on. And another category for a number of graduates would be to go into infrastructure work. And again, that might be by being employed by the promoters of infrastructure work. So there are several rural surveyors now working for HS2, for example, and several qualified rural surveyors in the Government Valuation Service as well, for that matter. Equally, there are now a number of firms who specialise in providing valuation and land referencing type services for the infrastructure industry, be that, you know, pipeline operators, cable operators, or developers of major projects like new railway lines and roads, so on. For all the ones who are working in the industry, for the promoters, there's probably an equal army of people doing that sort of work in private practice firms representing clients.
Of course.
It's pretty varied, really. It's very varied indeed, actually. And there would be other niche specialised things that people have gone into over the years as well. But the main thing for most graduates is getting a reasonable breadth of experience.
Absolutely.
So that they can they can present themselves for the assessment of professional competence properly.
Okay.
But I should add, actually, something else that a lot of rural graduates do is to become members of the Central Association of Agricultural Valuers as well. And they run their own syllabus and examinations, very practically focused. And you can tell the people who've got that qualification, because as well as M or FRICS after their name, right, they'll have the designation FAAVV for Fellow of the Central Association of Agricultural.
Right.
So a lot will be looking for jobs that support them to prepare for those examinations as well.
Yes. And for a young person, or for anyone really, looking for an apprenticeship, where would they start looking?
I think if you're looking for an apprenticeship, because Harper Adams University is the only place offering one today, you could do worse than start by contacting the university. What you would then have to do, though, is to get in touch with a suitable employer. Now, some employers may well advertise posts for apprenticeships, but if you think about it from an employer's point of view, it is really quite a risk to take on somebody completely unknown to the firm and commit to a 5-year program of training for them. So I think for a youngster looking at that particular route, it would be as well to make contact with potential employers as soon as possible. And I think most rural firms are really quite approachable if you get in touch with them, you know, in your teenage years, for example, and say you're interested in this sphere of work, and could you come and spend some time work shadowing, really, in the holidays or in the school work experience week or whatever. And I think of lots of people over the years who've done that and have developed a relationship with the firm, and now are in pretty senior positions in those.
Yes, so that's borne fruit for them.
I encourage anybody to do that. Other than the apprenticeship route, actually, I think the same advice holds good. But with a view to securing the placement year and the job on graduation, depending on which of the universities you choose to go to.
Okay. And just in terms of gathering other experience relevant to selection, either for a work placement or for a course, what can anyone be doing prior to that application process to try and make sure that they're in as strong a position as possible to secure employment or to secure a place on a course?
I think my recipe for success in those areas would be these items. I think take any opportunity you can to get practical experience. I spoke about my own experience on a farm earlier on, and I don't think that's so easy to get now because of the change in farming. But if you can get some farming experience, even by helping out a little bit at the weekends, but equally, if you can get some experience with any rural business or any rural activity, even if it's areas like conservation volunteering, for example, do practical work on hedgerows or trees and so on. So, you know, get involved in some practical sides of rural work. Alongside that, try and make sure that you develop an interest in and a passion for the countryside and the way it works in a business sense. You know, what actually makes the rural economy tick? Where does the money come from? Where does it go to? take an interest in that, read news articles, ask people about it, have a look from time to time at the Farmers Weekly, even the Estates Gazette, if you happen to be in a place where you can have a look at one particularly, any of the more rural topics in there. And there's a whole host of other publications that would be helpful for that. I mentioned already trying to secure short placements with firms as somebody looking to come into the profession. I think that shows your enthusiasm and it starts to build your CV. And I think there are a number of general, what we might call the softer skills, which one should focus on. And I think the first of those will be to develop a good use of English, both spoken and written. Make sure your basic maths is good. Particularly the ability to understand money, where it comes from and where it goes to and how it's measured. And I think anything you can do to develop your general analytical and logical skills will all be things that would set you up in very good stead for a career as a consultant in rural practice, surveying in one way and the other. A blend of the practical, but even though I've mentioned good maths and finance and English and analytical and logical skills, nevertheless, very much at the practical end of those things, the ability to apply them. Yeah. And take a strong interest in what goes on in the countryside, both for work and play, really.
Some really good practical advice there. And for the type of person that a firm is looking for, I mean, clearly somebody who has an interest in the countryside and perhaps sort of ticks a lot of those boxes in terms of experience and skill sets. But what sort of person do you think the rural pathway is really suited to?
Yes, somebody who's practically orientated, mm-hmm. Somebody who's comfortable with people, because bear in mind, if you are a private practice surveyor, you have clients. You need to get on well with them to serve their best interests and to retain their commercial support. But be aware as well that often you are representing your clients to somebody else. So if you are working for the promoter of a pipeline, you may be part of the public face of that pipeline, going to see people who are affected by it. And the ability to deal with people tactfully, diplomatically, but persuasively, are all essential things. So I wouldn't bother with this job if you shrink from those sorts of ideas, really. Keeping on with the practical side, I think the ability to solve problems, anybody who likes working their way through problems and getting to practical solutions, this would be an area of work to look at. And I think the thing that attracts a lot of us to it is that rural practice surveying does get you out and about in some very pleasant areas of the countryside. And for somebody who thinks that they don't want to be tied to a desk in the centre of a major conurbation 5 days a week, but who rather fancies being able to go and see their clients and their clients' properties and so on in the countryside for at least some of their working week, that's a powerful attraction. And if anything, it's something that the youngsters in the profession tend to do more of than the more senior members of it. As people become more senior, they tend to find themselves increasingly tied to their desks, I think. Mm. But they do get out and about as well, having said that.
Good. And just finally to sort of wrap up, I mean, looking back on your 30 years in the practice, what are the areas of rural surveying that you've particularly enjoyed? I mean, you've worked in many areas. What are the highlights for you? What's really stood out?
Yes, I think in a general way, I think the sociable nature of the profession has been a continued satisfaction. And I think the other thing is actually how it's changed over the years, Sarah. It's not a profession which has stood still. I qualified in 1983, and in the way of newly qualified surveyors, I knew everything, and I was totally on top of the knowledge for it and so on. In 1984, milk quotas were imposed on the dairy farming industry, which was a great shock at the time. But there was something brand new. It had to be learned about. And over the years, there have been so many changes like that. The arrival of renewable energies as a serious business proposition on rural estates, different valuation challenges that have emerged over the years, new areas of law, major reform of agricultural tenancy law in 1995. And still, we see this, although everybody's very worried about the effect of leaving the European Union and Brexit. Nevertheless, it's another thing which is driving change and development in rural business, and our profession is helping its clients with that. And I think that variety and the constant arrival of new things to get our minds around has been another highlight of the profession for me, and it certainly means that there's very rarely been a dull day in it. But that, combined with the sociable aspects of it and the problem-solving elements of it, I think have been the consistent rewards for me.
Good. Charles, that's been a really fascinating discussion, and I'm sure will serve as a great inspiration to anyone looking at the rural pathway. Thank you very much for your time this morning. That was Bricks and Mortar from EG with me, Sarah Jackman. For more on developing a career in real estate, see egi.co.uk.